Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, April 11, 2019. Sudan President Omar al-Bashir is ousted in power, but not all supporters are happy.
I, the defense minister and the head of the committee, hereby declare the uprooting of the ruling system and the arrest of its head and his detention in a safe place.
And a Sudanese analyst say protesters are rejecting the interim military regime which will rule for 2 years.
The reactions are actually mixed. Part of the opposition, as I said, they refuse implementing or adopting a solution with another military coup. So they need a civilian cabinet to be formed, and this would be a transitional government.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Those are voices from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir has been ousted in a military coup after 4 months of demonstrations against his autocratic 30-year rule. Sudan's defense minister, Awad Mohamed Ahmed bin Auf, addressed the Sudanese people in a live televised statement today. He said al-Bashir has been arrested and is in a safe place.
I, the defense minister and the head of the committee, hereby declare the uprooting of the ruling system and the arrest of its head and his detention in a safe place.
Of says the military has declared a state of emergency and has established a council to run Sudan for a 2-year period.
The Supreme Security Committee and its military force, as well as its other components, have decided to carry the full responsibility of governing for a 2-year transitional period, where the armed forces will primarily take over the ruling of the country, assisted by limited representation of other components of the committee.
Al-Bashir, who came to power in an Islamist-backed coup in 1989, imposed a nationwide state of emergency in February 22nd in an attempt to suppress the protest after an initial crackdown. Sudan's new military leader has imposed new changes.
First, the formation of a transitional military council in charge of ruling the country, the suspension of the transitional constitution established in 2005, declaring a state of emergency for 3 months, as well as a curfew state for 1 month from 10 p.m. to 4 a.m., closing all borders for 24 hours and crossroads throughout Sudan until further notice, dissolving the presidential institution and its staff, as well as the ministerial cabinet. The deputy ministers are in charge of the ministry's work, dissolving the National Council and state councils.
Of used Sudan's opposition, who urged Sudan's opposition and rebel groups to dialogue with the new military council.
I am calling on the arms holders and armed movement to embrace the homeland and safeguard the lives of the citizens and public properties and lives and honor with no exceptions.
The Sudan Professional Association, a group organizing the street protest, released a statement today rejecting the new leader and vowed to continue with protest in front of the military headquarters in Khartoum. The group said, quote, "We, the people of Sudan, across the cities and villages, in the north, in the south, in the east and west, join our political and social movement, trade unions and community groups in affirming through this declaration that we will continue with the course of peaceful struggle until the totalitarian regime is removed, end of quote. We now go live to Ayen Dengbior at the Sudanese Embassy in Washington for more updates. Ayen, can you bring us up to speed on what is happening at the Sudanese Embassy? Is it business as usual?
Hi, Tanza. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It is business as usual. I got here about 45 minutes ago, and the embassy is open. I was not able to go inside because the doors are locked, but I did ring in, and the lady at the front desk answered and told me that I was not able to come in. I requested an interview. They told me that no one was available for an interview, but they certainly are open. And I actually just witnessed somebody walk into the embassy.
And since you're telling me that nobody is able to talk to you, are there any other protesters outside the embassy? I mean, the Sudanese in the diaspora have been protesting.
Right now, there are no protesters in front of the embassy, but you're absolutely right. The last time that I was here was late January, and I came because there was a protest with at least 200 diaspora members here, and they all demanded that al-Bashir step down, and no one could have predicted that their commands would come true today.
All right, Ayen Bier, thanks for that update. That's Ayen Dengbior reporting live from the Sudanese Embassy in Washington. As developments in Khartoum unfold, the partners in South Sudan peace agreement, which includes Sudan, were forced to cancel today's joint monitoring and evaluation meeting to discuss the implementation of the September peace deal. The pre-transitional period is due to expire in 2 weeks. South Sudan's cabinet minister calls the situation in Khartoum alarming. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
The joint monitoring and evaluation meeting in Juba was called off today in light of the ongoing massive sit-in, and President Bashir's Oster Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lomoro says the government of South Sudan cannot sit idly as a revolution is carried out in a neighboring country, a country which is one of the grantors of the South Sudan peace deal to end the 5-year civil war.
We as the government have neighborhood with Sudan. We have to be cognizant of what is happening. We know that Sudan is a country that baited this peace agreement and is a guarantor, so there is an impact of how we think and how we look into it.
Lomoro says Sudan is hosting South Sudanese refugees and has been a home for most of its members of the opposition, including rebel leader Riek Machar.
We know that our important opposition members of this agreement are in Khartoum, and we also know that the president himself is not in the country, as well as the vice president, and it will only be civil to think that we should not be concerned.
Rajab Mohandis, executive director of the Juba-based Organization for Responsive Governance, says there are really concerns that the situation in Khartoum could negatively affect the peace implementation process in South Sudan.
And so there is definitely a concern that if there is a change in political leadership in Khartoum, the government or the new government would require some time to organize and focus on internal issues of Sudan before taking South Sudan as a priority.
Mohandis says the government should keep its priority on issues key to South Sudan, especially implementing the peace process, while keeping a close eye on developments in Khartoum.
We hope that our country, South Sudan, the political leaders will ensure that they maintain diplomatic relations with the authorities in Khartoum, whoever will be in power in days ahead.
It is unclear how the change in Sudan's political leadership will affect the South Sudan's peace process. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The South Sudan government has reacted swiftly to the changes in Khartoum by holding off the activities of the implementation of the revitalized peace deal. Nyal Deng Nyal is the South Sudan Minister of Foreign Affairs. He is here in Studio 14 to tell us more about his government's immediate task following the removal of President Omar al-Bashir. Minister Deng, thanks for agreeing to join us on this important day for the people of Sudan, and should I say the people of South Sudan as well.
Oh, thanks for having me. I would, of course, prefer very much that we speak about matters that directly relate to our country of South Sudan and not have to dwell on anything connected to the Republic of Sudan. Of course, as a matter of fact, Sudan is a neighbor, and South Sudan and Sudan have been associated, of course, for a very, very long time. And on this basis, what happens in one country impacts on what happens in the other country. There's no denying this fact. But I would really tend not to overplay the significance or the impact of what's happening in Sudan on the peace process in the Republic of South Sudan, for the simple reason that the relationship between Sudan and South Sudan actually transcend the leaderships. You know, there's a lot at stake in terms of the relationship between the two Sudan, South Sudan and Sudan. And so I believe that even when there are problems with issues of leadership in Sudan, they will come to pass, and I do not expect them to have a major impact on the relationship between Sudan and South Sudan, because both countries are quite well aware at the level of the people, of the populations, that good relationship between them is critical to the welfare in both countries.
Right.
Really.
Now, who is this new leader in Sudan, the defense minister? Do you know him?
I really don't know him that well, but I've come across him during the last stages of the discussions on the high-level revitalization forum. Actually, he played a leading role in working out the security arrangements of the revitalized peace agreement. He was a leading figure in that exercise, so I was able to get to meet him and discuss with him.
Adam, I know it's too early to make judgments here, but these new developments could affect the peace deal. You're saying he was very, you know, influential in the peace talks. How is your reading?
Well, my reading is that the entire political class in the Republic of Sudan, whether opposition or government, I believe from what I've seen and what I've heard, even through my own interaction with them, I believe that they are committed to a cause whereby productive and peaceful relations are maintained with the Republic.
Whether Bashir is around or not.
I believe so. I believe so.
And so,
as a matter of fact, even the opposition in some of the statements that they've put out, they've said very clearly that they would want to improve Sudan's relations with its neighbors. And they singled out South Sudan for specific mention as a country with which they wanted to see good relations.
I know that you are in Washington here, and there are other people or other diplomats from the South Sudan Foreign Service making contacts with the new leadership in Sudan. How are you going to interact with this interim group? I mean, they are there temporarily. They could be new faces. Is that going to be a challenge?
Well, I think this change has just happened. We really do not know the direction in which things are going to unfold. So let's wait a little bit and see. But the fact remains that Sudan and South Sudan have to continue relating to each other, irrespective of who is governing the country.
And the head of the pre-transitional committee, that's Tut Kaw, who has been a very close ally of President Bashir for quite a long time. Now, people have already started making alarm in Juba that this is going to affect the peace deal.
I believe that should have no impact at all on the performance of Tut Kaw as the chair of the National Pre-Transitional Committee, because at the end of the day, he's a South Sudanese, irrespective of the relationship that he might have had with people in Sudan. He's a South Sudanese, basically.
And tell us a little bit more about why you're here. I don't want to sound like I'm chasing you from Washington, but what are you doing here?
Well, I'm here basically for two purposes. Primarily, I'm here with a delegation consisting of a number of ministers from the government of the Republic of South Sudan to showcase the investment opportunities that exist in the Republic of South Sudan. We are strong believers in private sector being the driving engine of socioeconomic development, and we believe that the United States, especially the private sector here, has a role to play in the development of South Sudan. So we are basically coming to alert them the possibilities that exist in the Republic of South Sudan. Secondly, it's also an opportunity for us to interact with the leadership here in the United States of America with a view to discussing bilateral relations and seeking to improve the relationship between Washington and Juba. The peace agreement, of course, is very, very important. And initially, there's been a little bit of skepticism in the United States and the Troika about the direction in which things have taken in the Republic of South Sudan.
Right.
So we think that it's important to continue engaging them. And there are signs that they are becoming a little bit more enthusiastic now about the peace process in South Sudan and its prospects.
All right. Minister Nyal, we will come back to you. Just hold your thoughts on that. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what does the military coup mean for the people of Sudan? We hear from Sudanese analysts on that right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best way to introduce change?
You have to educate. Education is the key factor to change. Without education, people will resist.
You have to educate the person. You have to educate people on the situation on ground, the implication of that situation, and if the change is to come in, what impact is that change going to create?
So the best way to introduce change is to understand the change, and you try to educate the people on what change is all about.
I think just go right ahead and do it, because there are always people who don't really like change, and there are also always people who like change and they're conducive to change. And so I think there's always going to be that one person who's like, no, I don't like this, it's different.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. The situation in Khartoum looks unpredictable, and Professor Hassan Haji, a political science lecturer at the University of Khartoum, talks to VOA's Peter Clotty about Bashir's removal.
But this would depend on whether the next steps that would be undertaken by the military council would be inclusive and acceptable to all political parties and forces in the country.
How are Sudanese reacting to this? Because I know the Sudanese Professional Association and other civil society organizations protested repeatedly for weeks, demanding that President Bashir steps down. How are they reacting now?
Yeah, the reactions are actually mixed. The part of the opposition, as I said, they refuse implementing or adopting a solution with another military coup. So they need a civilian cabinet to be formed, and this would be a transitional government that would prepare for the general elections. We are still waiting on the responses of the traditional political forces like the Umma Party and its leader, Sadiq al-Mahdi, the previous prime minister. But we heard from the Association of Professionals, they rejected any other form of military rule in Sudan.
Where does Sudan go from here, looking at what Sudanese have witnessed today?
I think we are facing a number of challenges, actually. First, we have the economy, which is now in deteriorated greatly in the last year or so. This is the main concern now for the most of the Sudanese people, how to meet the minimum needs for the families. The other challenge is how to implement or to bring the military groups in Darfur and in the Nuer Mountains and in the southern Blue Nile to the peace process. How to maintain peace in Sudan is also another challenge for the coming military rule.
President Bashir faces indictment from the ICC. Several arrest warrants have been issued against him, and even the defense minister himself has been indicted. Do you foresee President Bashir being handed over to the ICC since he no longer is in charge of Sudan?
I don't think so, because in Sudan, a large number of people, they want other ways of settling the grievances, where people would try to solve this by traditional Sudanese and African means.
That's political science professor Hassan Haji at the University of Khartoum speaking with my colleague Peter Cloti. Some residents of Juba say they often skip meals because they don't have enough money to buy food for 3 meals a day. Shoppers at Juba's custom market say food prices jump every day. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
45-year-old Juba resident Deborah Yange says her family eats once a day because it's too expensive to provide 3 meals in a day. She says her husband, who is the sole provider of the family, is a soldier who earns less than 2,000 South Sudanese pounds per month. She says she must divide the salary between her and her co-wife even when the money comes late. Speaking in Arabic, Yange says she buys greens, okra and fish from South Sudanese who come from Terekeka and resells the food in Juba's customs market to make a small profit. She says her 14 children have to wait the whole day before they have something to eat.
Until evening, if you don't collect the money from the market, how will you prepare the food? At times we endure and eat once a day. Where will you get the money to feed twice a day? My husband does not earn much. He shares 1,700 between two wives.
Juba resident Esther Kiden says she came to customs market to buy groundnuts for her peanut business, but she found the price has increased slightly. Speaking in Arabic, she says she bought a barrel of groundnuts a week ago at 3,300 South Sudanese pounds, but they cost 3,500 pounds today.
Today you'll get a different price. Tomorrow you'll find another rate. You'll never find a price of a good constant. Today may increase, tomorrow may decrease. The next day may be more expensive than before. We used to buy meat at 600 pounds, but they have increased half a kilo to 700 pounds.
Juba resident Louis Bayer says prices of commodities have increased compared to few months ago. She says her family has resorted to eating light food and taking tea during lunch hours to save money. Bayer says she bought greens today at 200 South Sudanese pounds, but what she was given was a smaller batch compared to what she received for the same price a few weeks ago.
Maybe you get for 200, maybe 100 is much. Eh? But always there's an addition of our prices. Eh? Those who are selling for us, they do go and sell from somewhere. So when they get it expensive, so they come and charge us again. So today it is so expensive.
In customs market today, a kilogram of meat costs 1,300 South Sudanese pounds. A kilogram of sugar costs 200 South Sudanese pounds. A half liter of cooking oil costs 150 pounds, and a handful of green vegetables costs 50 pounds, all prices that are higher than last week. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
If you have just joined us, we have Minister Nyal Deng Nyal with us in the studio here. Nyal is the South Sudan's Minister of Foreign Affairs. Mr. Minister, we are back to this situation in South Sudan. Now we have left Sudan a little bit. How is the economy doing these days in Juba?
Well, the economy has been witnessing for quite some time now a lot of difficulties, but it's noteworthy that the situation has started improving a little bit. First of all, the prospects for improvement are quite good, you see, because the political situation and the stability and economic performance are interlinked. You know, peace and stability creates conditions that can help improve the economy. So that's a very important point to note. On the other hand, also, I believe that some measures have been undertaken by the Ministry of Finance and the Central Bank, which should help improve the situation. For instance, the National Revenue Authority, which is a body which collects...
It's doing well under the Ghanaian national.
Yeah, but the principle of actually separating the collection of revenue from the disbursement of funds is very, very important. And that has been done. The two should not be... placed into one body. Somebody collects the revenue, another is responsible for their disbursement. Mm-hmm. And as you correctly pointed out, revenue collection has improved quite markedly. The central bank also has pursued some monetary policies, which are quite positive in the sense that they've had the effect now of lowering the inflation, because inflation is of course tends to erode the value of the currency, and that's why a lot of our people are facing difficulties, because their wages have remained where they are, but prices have been going up.
Yeah, and how would you react to critics who would say South Sudan has the most good policies on paper, but its implementation is the problem?
It's true in many respects, because even if you look at the laws before even independence, we have got a range of legislation on the statute books that are very, very, very good. But I think enforcing the legislation and acting on the law sometimes is wanting. That's the part that we want. So we need more political commitment from all the stakeholders. Like that. But our laws are quite good. If you look, for instance, at our laws on investment, they are very, very good. If you look, for instance, on our mining code, it was formulated by Australia, which is one of the countries leading worldwide in the area of mining. But you can have good laws, you can have good legislation, good policies, but you need to act on them. So we need to summon.
And acting on it calls for, you know, strict measures. There's this tag on South Sudan. Every time you talk about South Sudan, the issue of corruption pops up. What is your government doing to fight corruption?
Yeah, corruption can be fought in many ways, but I just mentioned to you something which is a measure that can be used to address the question of corruption. The separation of the collecting agency from the agency that disburses. It involves different agencies, and when you have got more than more eyes looking into a situation, it's always better. On the other hand, of course, laws have to be applied. If people are caught engaging in corrupt activities, I think they should also be brought to account.
But to since South Sudan got its independence, nobody has been put in jail for being corrupt. Is that correct?
Well, in that respect, South Sudan is not unique. But, you know, one very, very important thing, even if people are not brought to the courts of law, there is also the court of public opinion. And naming and shaming people is a very, very effective tool of addressing also corruption. And I'm happy that people talk about these things, because it puts people on notice that people are watching.
Yeah, and time is really against us in the studio here. But I would like to ask one final question. This is coming from people in Juba. How much money is the government making from the oil in a day?
I would not know how much the government is making in oil in a day, but I can tell you that when the government sells a cargo of oil, and we sell about a cargo every month, we probably get anywhere between 35 to 40 million.
That's a day?
That's for the whole month. That's for the whole month. But you have to know that the problem with South Sudan also is that we are actually a money economy. Everything depends on oil. So we practically have to provide everything from the little money that we get from the oil.
All right, Honorable Nyal Deng Nyal, thank you very much for being with us here in the studio and telling us more about what is happening in Sudan, in South Sudan.
Thank you for having me.
That was Honorable Nyal Deng Nyal, South Sudan's Minister for Foreign Affairs, with us here in the studio. And that brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with Abdulaziz Al Mubarak singing in Arabic.
عطرت كل الدنيا وانت مهارة، عطرت كل الدنيا وانت مهارة، وحد حرير خديك وحد مطار، سلمينا لو بالعين او بالاشياء.
We have been listening to Abdulaziz Al Mubarak with that beautiful melody from Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
الدنيا